Quick question. When was the last time that you actually looked at your website and thought, this is really working for me? If the answer is you're not sure, don't worry because you're not alone. Most therapists have a website, but they don't actually know what's helping it to convert, what might be confusing potential clients, and what might actually be turning people away. That's exactly why a website audit is so helpful because it can give you a clear outside perspective on what's actually happening when someone lands on your website. So I'm hosting a live website audit workshop April 17th, where I will walk you through what to look for, look at your website live, talk about what to fix, and how to make your website actually work for you. To learn more and sign up, head to the show notes to register. Now, onto the episode. You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Comegys, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm joined today by my guest, Dr. Elizabeth Polinsky. Liz is a military spouse, certified emotionally focused couples therapist and supervisor, and the owner of Communicate and Connect Counseling in Virginia Beach, Virginia, which specializes in providing marriage and family therapy services to military and veteran families. In addition to relationship counseling, Dr. Polinsky also provides therapist training and supervision in emotionally focused couples therapy. You can also check out her podcast, the Communicate and Connect podcast for military relationships, on your favorite podcast platform. Liz, thank you so much for joining us here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me be here. I'm excited to get to talk to another military spouse all about military relationship things. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for this show. And I think for listeners, you're going to get a unique take with this episode because you're going to get to hear what it's like working with military families and spouses from military spouses who are therapists. So I think we have like a dual perspective that we get to bring to this. So I'm excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
So I always start off with guests by asking, how did you get into this field? What made you say, I think I want to be a therapist and I want to go into private practice?
Yeah, I wasn't sure initially. You know, some people know early on, like, this is my career path. That wasn't the case for me. My undergrad degree is actually in linguistics with a minor in women's studies. And for a long time, I thought I was going to do like youth ministry type stuff. And then I had a bunch of changes happen in my life. And I had a mentor who was a social worker. And I just sort of had like a lot of people at the same time starting to talk to me about counseling. You could be really great in the counseling field. And it was something I had never considered. And so I decided to get my master's in social work. That way I could maybe try out counseling, but then there would be tons of other social work options for me.
Yeah.
And it blends so well with any sort of like youth ministry type things that I had been interested in. But then started in my social work program, really focusing on military social work. I come from a dual military family where both my parents served in the military. We have generations of military on both sides, but so the military has been a big component of my personal life. And then at the same time that I was in grad school, I was dating this army guy, and I was like, yeah, okay, let me make sure I can have something that will transition well
right.
With him. We're not together, but it was still so valuable, the program that I did, and which focused on military social work. And then I started working at the VA and did a postgraduate fellowship there, which sort of confirmed, okay, I really do love counseling and working with veterans. And then that has been my focus pretty much ever since. I met my now husband when I was working at the VA, and when we got married and started moving around again, I decided to switch. This was prior to COVID. They weren't interested in hiring or like transitioning my job at the VA to a remote position. So I left, and then first went to a group practice and then into solo practice, then created my own group practice, but really focused on couples therapy now with military.
I can resonate with so many different pieces of your story, being a military spouse, being a social worker, not initially planning on being in a relationship with somebody in the military, but like recognizing eventually, like, oh, okay, yeah, like this is portable in certain ways and other ways it's not. But I think I love where I can resonate so much with, okay, we're gonna have to move and my job is no longer available to me. And what do I do now? And that for you, it was, okay, we've got to find something unique. So I can take what I have this background in and I can apply it into a group practice that I'm a part of. And then I can go do my own thing and start a solo practice. And then I can turn that into a group practice and that it works for you as a military spouse or a spouse of a military service member, that it is still your thing and you get to continue to build and grow your career when so much of our life as someone married to someone in the military, like, tends to be about their career, but that you get to have this thing and it's yours. That just because the military tells you you have to move doesn't mean that you have to give it up.
Yeah, I think that actually took a lot of work. I had sort of my own almost like little mini crisis when we were about to get married, because the job that I was working at the VA was my absolute dream job. It was everything I had wanted in my career. I was doing clinical work, but I was also doing research and I was helping run a training program. And I was also had this sort of administrative role where I was creating these processes in the clinic. I had like my perfect balance, all the things I wanted to do. And in some ways, I knew that if I left, that was going to be incredibly hard to recreate. And so what I decided was, well, let me pursue a dream that I haven't had the opportunity to pursue. That was sort of my internal compromise. And the compromise with my husband was that if I'm giving all of this up, then I want to go down this other route that I've wanted to, but have never really had the chance to, which was. So then I went back and I got my PhD in couples therapy. Well, it's in marriage and family therapy, but it's focused on couples therapy. And from that point on, focused all of my clinical work on working with couples, and military and veteran couples, of course. But it really was, this is such a huge sacrifice that I have to give up. And how can I almost like gather something else for myself? Is the picture that I have going through my mind. Hold on to another dream. Like, yes, this sucks. There was so much grief leaving that job, but there really would not have been very many opportunities for me to pursue couples counseling in the VA, or even if I had worked in DOD, like any sort of medical-based system is so focused on individual counseling. So this did allow me then to grab hold of and pursue another dream that I had been interested in for a really long time.
Well, and I think you highlight something that's so important. And I hope that for listeners who work with clients that either are a military service member or a spouse of a service military member or with couples, but that acknowledging that there is this loss a lot of times for the spouse of the service member, where for you, there, again, you use the word grief, and I think it's so accurate of what happens when a spouse has to, like, you have to move, right? It's, you don't have a choice. And I know for me, when I met my husband. I was in my career in New Orleans. I loved the city. It was where I went to grad school. It was where I had all my friends. And I remember like us having the conversation probably about a year before he was going to be moving. You know, he's like, I want you to move with me. And we'd been together over a year and a half at that point. And we knew like it was probably getting more serious and it was probably heading towards marriage. And he said, you know, I want you to come with me. And we had to have the conversation of, okay, but like, what does that mean? Because you're asking me to uproot my entire life and my career that I have worked and built and I'm really proud of. And, you know, I'm working towards future things, right? And you are the person I want to be with. But then that means, like you said, it's a sacrifice. And I think it's important for those who work with military spouses in practice to just really recognize that there is a loss a lot of times that come for that spouse, especially if they are, you know, career minded or if that is something that is important to them. It almost becomes like a little bit of a loss of identity in some ways.
And I think we're talking about it in terms of career because that's really relevant to you and I. But
Yeah.
I certainly have heard this. I'm now no longer near my family. I don't have the neighborhood community that I had, or the church community that I had, or there are so many other aspects that go into like this is who I am and this is what makes this place my home
Yeah.
that other military spouses would be grieving as well when they move. And I think it from a couple's perspective, it can be really, really hard for both of them because one, it sometimes is really hard to just talk about the feelings that people are experiencing. How do you talk about grief, especially if you haven't really experienced it before? How do you support your partner can also be a challenge. But then there is a way that it can touch on insecurities as well, for both people in the relationship with the military service member. Potentially, of course, it's always a case-by-case basis, like what's happening for this particular individual and couple, but am I asking too much of you? Might be going through their mind. Or am I not worth loving, worth giving that up to move with me? I want to have this fun adventure with you where we're gonna do really fun, cool things and be doing this thing together as a team. Why are you so sad and not being with me in all of this funness that we're adventuring on together? And then, of course, the spouse can be like, well, why can't I just get myself going and moving and excited and with my partner? Why am I irritable? Why am I sad all the time? It can be a hard thing for them to navigate together. And then do it every few years.
It's not like a one-time thing. It's every couple years. Well, and I think, you know, so when I got together with my then fiance, now husband, our first station together was moving from New Orleans to Hawaii. So it was very like it was a big move. It was a really, really big move. And, you know, everybody's like, Hawaii, it's great. Like, this should be fantastic. But we were also weren't moving to Oahu. We were moving to Maui, which is a very different island than Oahu, where there is a lot of military. And Maui is very isolated. It's very small. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. But it's not like living in a city like New Orleans, where there was a lot going on and all of that, right? And there wasn't even a military community per se that we would have had on Oahu, where there are bases and that kind of thing. And so we had very similar conversations where it was, you know, when my husband first was asking me to move with him, I said, you need to know three things. One, I hate change. Two, I hate moving. And three, I'm going to be extremely sad to leave New Orleans. It's like, as long as you can understand those things and you know that about me, then like, yes, like I want to move with you. And that first move, like it took him a little bit of time to understand, like, okay, this is really hard for her. And then even the following move, I think he thought like, well, we've done it once. This should be like, you should be like, okay, the next move. And it's like, no, like this is still a big change. This is still hard. And even though we're moving someplace I'm excited to go, it's that duality of emotions that we experience when we talk with our clients about that. Yeah, I'm excited for this new adventure, but I'm also really sad about the stability I'm leaving, or the community, or the friends, or if I'm close to family, right? Or the job that I love, right? That it can be this double, emotional experience. And I think it can be really hard for the service member to fully understand that sometimes, because when they signed up for the military, they're like, yeah, this is an adventure. And like they got into it with that mindset. But if you're coming into it as a spouse, especially I think if you're joining in a relationship with somebody who's already in the service, I think it's can be really challenging because again, you don't go into this being like, yeah, like I'm gonna up my life every couple years.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of saying like baseline military life is challenging. And then what I see happen with couples is the difficulty with communicating emotions. That I see that you're sad. I start feeling kind of guilty that you're feeling sad. I start feeling irritated because I want to have us go on this adventure. And so then I'm kind of moody. And then the spouse sees their service member kind of moody and not communicating about those feelings. And then they feel even more sad because now there's like extra tension between us. But they're kind of worried about talking about it because their spouse is moody, so they don't talk about it. But then they go in their room, and then they're more sad, and then they have this cycle where they kind of trigger each other, and it keeps going, and they get further and further apart because they're not communicating about those feelings, or they haven't really learned how to yet. Versus what I would my hope for. Couples who maybe navigate this in a little bit more grace for each other would be this idea of co-regulation that I can tell you about how I feel, and you can be there for me and support me, and we support each other through this roller coaster of emotions that comes up. But that's very hard, very, very hard for people to do.
So I work in my private practice with a lot of my, I don't see couples, I see individuals. And one of my specialties is working with military spouses. And a lot of times when they are coming in, there is some issue in the relationship. And so we may be individually addressing some of that. And at the same time, I would say a significant amount of them are saying, I think we need couples counseling, or I would like to do couples counseling, but I can't get my partner to do it, or I don't think they would be interested in doing it, or they're telling me it's a you problem, like you just need to work on this. And I'm curious, I think in military culture, there is, especially for service members, especially for men, this stigma of going to see a therapist, going to see a counselor. And I think there's starting to be a little bit of a shift in the military with that. But I'm curious, how do you get the buy-in with couples, that are associated with the military? Because again, I have a hard enough time getting individuals sometimes. Not necessarily that are spouses, but are the service member. And I think getting them to say, yeah, let's work on this as a couple can be really challenging. So I'm really curious how that has been for you and how you get that that buy-in from them.
Yeah, those are really great questions. I find myself, my mind going a little bit all over the place. I think you're right that that's shifting and is improving significantly, especially I'm thinking, I actually think COVID, this was maybe like a little silver lining with COVID, that things around mental health got so much more talked about publicly. And And people, even at the enlisted ranks in the military, have more and more higher education.
Yeah.
And it seems to be like as that increases, more people are willing to consider counseling. But there definitely is still a perception that if I go, it means something is wrong.
Yeah.
And that can be really, really challenging because I think that all marriages are hard. All military life is pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Then if you have both of them together, I just keep thinking, of course you would need support throughout all of that. But it can be hard. I certainly know that there are times where one person really wants to go to counseling and the other person doesn't, and that absolutely is a struggle. I think offering consults, like if the therapists can offer consults, couples can request consults, because oftentimes one of the things that is a concern, I'm just going through it in my list, is like it means something's wrong with us, which is something that a couples counselor can dispel in the consult. I'm going to get sided against and blamed, and it's all going to be said to be my fault. That's the other really common concern for people who are hesitant about couples counseling. And I wish I could say that never happened. And I do think this comes down to choosing a quality couples therapist. There are
Sure.
people who dabble who have not had any training at all in couples therapy. And that feels like a huge ethical concern for me.
Yeah.
But it
That's why
exists.
I don't see couples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people can have some pretty negative experiences, but in the ideal world with someone who has good quality training in working with couples, the therapist would be striving all the time to be very neutral between the two of them, not taking sides and making that very explicit to the couple. And then talking to them about trying to see how both of their perspectives fit together and make sense, like puzzle pieces, and that what we're working on is actually understanding the puzzle that's happening between the two of you. Working on the relationship, that the relationship is the client, not either of you. These sorts of things are things that can help create buy-in or can help reassure somebody who's concerned. About it means something's wrong. It means that, or this is just another avenue to blame me. Those things can get addressed in a consult call.
Yeah. Are there things that you find unique with working with military couples that, like, for listeners who specialize in couples, they have the training, they're seeing couples. Are there some unique things that you would want them to be aware of when it comes to working with military couples?
Yes. Yeah. Let me think about that. I think my very initial thought is scheduling. Scheduling is very challenging. And some of it is how it is. Some people work in agencies who, you just have to follow the policies that the agency sets. Some people, based on their own, like even if they have a solo practice, that therapist has to have like appropriate boundaries that fit with their life, and so can't necessarily work all the evenings and weekends.
Yeah.
And then you also have like cancellation policies that it sort of depends on the therapist's entire kind of situation that they're working
Sure.
with. But one thing that I've done that has really, really worked for me, I do have some evening and weekends. And then, of course, like a lot of the trainees that I help train in my practice have at least some evening and weekends to try to help with the challenges of getting off of work. In addition, I tend to have something that is called a reschedule only policy that if they need to cancel, they can cancel 15 minutes up to their appointment as long as they can reschedule within a certain period of time. And so I have done a lot of work to try to shift my policies and practices in a way that would still meet my needs, like what I need in terms of work-life balance, financial security, but also try to meet the flexibility needs around military couples. A lot of people have shift schedules. That has been a common thing that I've seen. And so this has worked really well for those who have shift schedules. It does mean that I have to keep spaces open in my schedule to have people reschedule into, but that has worked really, really well. So.
Yeah, so really, I mean, I think you're so right that and the military schedule is so it varies and it changes and shifts, and it also varies based on like you could be, same branch of service, station, same place, but different jobs have different schedules, and not just different schedules, but difference in what's the word? Like emergency is the word that's coming to mind, but that's not it. Like on call, maybe it is, where they may get called up because, oh, there's this situation going on. I mean, like my husband and the positions that he's had in the Coast Guard at various times, it may be, okay, we're going out to go deal with an oil spill, or there's been a hurricane coming. And so now all of a sudden your schedule's completely different, right? And so, yes, every job has to a degree changes in schedule and such, but the military, there's very little room to be like, nope, I'm not doing that. When
Yes,
they're
which is
told,
very different, right? It's very different than a civilian who can say, like, I'm going to take my sick leave and I'll just plug it into the system. And, or every day during lunch, that's when I can go to my counseling thing. Or let me just talk to my boss and rearrange my schedule around this. And I'll work longer on Tuesdays so I can go Wednesday afternoon. That sort of thing does not exist, really. For the military couple. And so that's, well, it's another barrier, I think, to someone wanting to start counseling, that person who's feeling more resistance to starting it, because you're basically asking them to sign up to pay your cancellation fee on a regular basis, which can be, just an emotionally hard thing to say, like, well, I actually know that I'm probably rarely ever going to be able to commit to this because of my schedule. And that's another reason that at least couples don't go as often.
Do you find amongst military couples, are there like consistent themes that come up? Because it's interesting, when I look over the course of the military spouses that I work with, variety of different backgrounds, variety of different locations, variety of different branches of service, but there are definitely the certain themes that come up consistently in their struggle individually, but a lot of times, again, it does stem to stuff with the military, whether it is infidelity, while service member is away, or family adjustment to service member being deployed or being away for training and reentry or like reintegration with family. Again, just the challenges of I'm responsible for everything of the household and I don't feel respected by my partner who's the service member and thinks I'm not doing enough. There are themes that come up amongst the individual client. And so I'm curious if you see common themes among couples as well.
Yeah, well, I think you just mentioned a lot of them. So, in that division of household labor is
Yeah.
almost always a discussion point because even if it starts out relatively equal, once there is some sort of deployment and it all gets put on one person, it can be very hard to then shift things back to a more equal thing between us. So that is very, very common. Parenting concerns are always a concern with couples, but then they get exacerbated with the military. So couples often come in with conflict around parenting and who gets to make the decisions. I think there is, we could call that in terms of household management, division of chores, parenting, there's often aspects of who gets to make the decision. There can be a lot of conflict around money, too. So I can't remember the percentage off the top of my head, but it's a very high percentage of military spouses who are either unemployed or underemployed and who are
Yeah, I just saw that statistic recently. I mean, I think it's like 27 or 37. It's and that even feels low to me.
Yeah, it would be easy to Google and look it up because I know this is something that the DoD tracks
Yeah.
in terms of their research. That tends to be an area of conflict is finances. And then also when it comes into this idea of maybe I can just paint the picture of like now we've moved. There aren't job options that will pay me what I am used to getting paid. Childcare costs is through the roof, and there's not space on the base for my kid to go to the childcare on base. So I'll stay home and homeschool and watch the kids. But now I'm struggling with my own identity because of that. I don't get to go out and do as much stuff that is just fulfilling for me. I want to go do something. And then I talk to my husband about it. And he's concerned about money because I'm not bringing in the money that I used to, none now, even though we're saving on childcare. And so then he doesn't want me to go do whatever the thing is because it's too expensive. And now we have this conflict between us of who gets to decide and who gets to make decisions about money. Well, now he's the one that works. I'm not working. But wait, you're not valuing the contributions that I make as a parent, homeschooling our kids. Like one thing can then spiral into all of these
Yeah.
areas between the couple.
I feel like you could copy and paste that picture and like apply it to like 95% of military couples, especially if there are kids. And I think that's important for listeners to understand if you are, again, working with military service couples or individuals, and if you aren't in the military yourself or associated with it, it can be hard to understand some of this, but that there is a real dynamic, especially when it comes to almost like a sense of like a position of power where one spouse is providing the income for the family and the other is doing really unpaid labor for the family. And they are both work, but not always seen and valued by the other partner. And that then really can take a toll, obviously, on the marriage, but then on the individual as well.
Yes. Yeah. And you have a piece of military culture that gets tied into that of like a lot of work in the military gets delegated. Like you're in charge of this, you're in charge of that, I'm in charge of this. Go make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
And versus a different approach in a marriage. Certainly there are couples who are happy and feel great in their marriages and have very traditional roles and thrive in that. But I think a lot of the couples that I end up working with are not thriving in that
Yeah.
and are really craving a sense of there's this shared joint decision making, that it's us as a team who are deciding these things, deciding whether I stay home, whether I work, what we do with the finances, how we prioritize finances, how do we do that together to make decisions around parenting, and then how do we maintain a team atmosphere when you're gone, and then all the decisions come to me.
Yeah.
And then how do we transition back to a team? That seems to be the couples that I tend to work with anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, just like in any relationship, in any marriage, there are seasons, right? Like you add a new child to a family or somebody takes a new job. And so there's ebb and flow and having to pivot and adjust as a couple and figure out like what is this new dynamic. But I think with a lot of military couples, that shifting and pivoting happens, I think, almost more frequently than, say, for a civilian couple, because there's a constant pivot and a constant change because of not just deployments, but now again, you're on shift work and you're working at a different time of day, or we thought we were going to be here for 3 years and now they're telling us we're moving in a year, or whatever the dynamic is. Again, like, childcare has fallen through, or we can't find childcare, and I had the job lined up, right? So I think there are dynamics that any civilian can absolutely relate to, but I think they're almost heightened, at least is my sense that I see professionally and personally with military couples, that it's almost exacerbated in a way.
Yes, yeah, I think that is absolutely correct. And you also have them typically adjusting to multiple things at once.
Yes.
Like, we're gonna become parents for the first time while moving and preparing for a deployment, you know?
Yeah.
So, all of it gets heightened in military couples.
Yeah. If somebody is listening and they're like, I'm not sure if I should see military couples. I like working with couples, but this is kind of intriguing. What's the case for saying, hey, maybe you should consider seeing military couples in your practice if you are trained in working with couples?
Yeah, I've not met a couples therapist who would say I wouldn't work with a military couple. What I meet more often is people who are individual therapists who say I would never work with couples. I meet a lot of people. There's actually a pretty social work counseling is a common career path for military spouses. And a lot of the people who have a big passion for working with the military often want to work with like trauma and PTSD and the individual versus working with the couple. And so there are so many people who work with military and veteran populations but don't work with couples. And that's actually the group that I think should really do some high quality training in couples therapy to broaden their services to helping military couples and families instead of just working with individuals. And of course, I'm an EFT therapist. I'm totally biased. I'm going to own that. There are other types of couples therapy, and they, just like any type of therapy, they all rely on a solid relationship and can be helpful, but it is currently the only evidence-based, empirically based treatment for couples. According to the APA division, they keep track of the research for all types of therapy in terms of whether it meets criteria to be considered an evidence-based treatment. And currently, EFT couples therapy is the only one on that list. So that is what I tend to recommend for people who are interested in considering getting started with couples therapy, is to get training in EFT, which can be done through the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy.
We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. Now, I know you also have your own podcast that specializes in or focuses on military couples. Can you tell us a little bit about your show?
Yes, yeah, happy to. So it's called the Communicate and Connect podcast for military relationships. It was a COVID project that I started, but I really, really love it. One of the things, as we were mentioning earlier, was the difficulty of getting schedules, getting in to see a couples therapist. We didn't even touch the issue of TRICARE and insurance.
That's part two episode of all of that.
Yeah. So, but let's just say there are several, like, that can be an extra barrier to entry into seeing a couples therapist. So I wanted to create something that was for military couples, something that they could listen to and get good, solid advice and knowledge, both from experts, but from military couples who have made it through all of these challenges, so that way they can start taking a lot of the tips that are out there applied to military life, so that way they can hopefully feel really good and positive as much as they can together as they navigate. So often podcasts are just kind of like more generically focused on relationships, don't hone in on how do you apply this in the context of military life. And the military focused podcasts are often geared towards military spouses or towards service members and veterans. There doesn't tend to be a lot. I really haven't seen anything else really out there focused on how do we as a couple navigate military life together.
Well, and I think the case could be made that anybody can benefit from individual therapy, but I also think a lot of times the stress that military couples, that everything that we've talked about, that if we were able to address some of those, and if the military even prioritized support for, you know, partners going to therapy together, that some of the other issues could be not resolved, but that maybe, I picture like a fire, right? Like it's turned down a little bit. It's not as hot, right? And that then you have service members who are better able to perform their duties because the stress at home is not as intense. And so, yeah, where TRICARE isn't always in support necessarily of paying for couples therapy, but that having a tool like your podcast that couples can be listening to and to navigate and recognizing that, yeah, with the command or, the assignment that you're a part of, if the team is not working together, the whole unit is suffering. And I think the same thing, obviously, with a relationship. If the partners are not working together, then the whole family is suffering, the kids, the spouse, the each partner. And so, I love that you are prioritizing saying, yep, the service member needs help, the spouse, the civilian member needs help, but the couple is really, where I'm going to put my work and focus, because then that may be able to address some of the other stuff that's going on individually. Some of the individual struggles may be resolved if we can address the stuff as a couple.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, how many people do you see who come in for relationship issues, right? To individual counseling. We do have research on EFT, doing couples therapy and that decreasing trauma symptoms, decreasing depression symptoms in women. I won't go into too much of a research focus here, but that there is a big impact when you work on improving the couple relationship. You can then shift a lot of the mental health presentation at an individual level as well.
Liz, if listeners want to learn more about you or your work, where is the best place for them to connect with you?
Yes, yeah. We our practice is called Communicate and Connect Counseling. It's headquartered in Virginia Beach, Virginia, although we have therapists who are licensed in several states. Benefit of the military, I'm licensed in like six states. But you can go to communicateandconnect.com to learn more about our services. We have ongoing individual and couples and family therapy, along with weekend-long intensives. We're also starting to do some free community workshops every month. That people can attend. And all the information about the podcast is also on that same website, communicateandconnect.com.
And we will have that linked in the show notes. I know you also have a quiz that kind of goes along with current episodes of your show. Can you share a little bit about that and where people could find that quiz?
Yeah, so we're right now on the podcast, we're doing a series on attachment. To help think about how secure, safe, comfortable do we feel together, and how that is a really important piece for strong relationships. And so we have a quiz that's connected to that series called the Are You There For Me quiz. And it uses the Brief Accessibility, Responsiveness, and Engagement Scale, which I used in my dissertation research, and I use that scale with almost every couple who comes in to give us like a baseline of how the relationship is doing. And so you can take that quiz, and I also include recommendations like if you score in this range, then you might want to consider couples counseling. If you score in this range, you could go to maybe like a marriage enrichment workshop that happens on the weekend, something like that. If you score in this range, you're struggling, and you might want to consider an intensive, like really intensive therapy over the weekend, and then follow-up work. So,
And is that all listed on your website that can access the quiz there?
yes, it's in the show notes are housed on the website under the podcast area, and it's connected to the any of the episodes that are currently in this attachment series that we have going.
Perfect. Well, Liz, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect with me. I always love connecting with other military spouses and then just other therapists too, obviously. But I'm really encouraged by the work you're doing because, like I said, I see a lot of individuals who want to go to couples therapy, but either one can't find necessarily a therapist that probably that really specializes in couples. Because again, that's one of the things a lot of times when I have an individual come, they're like, I wanted to see you because you are a military spouse and you do understand it. And so I think having somebody who specializes in couples like you, but that is also married into the military, you grew up in the military, right? Like, so you understand it on a personal level too, I think is just really unique. And I really value the work you're doing because I think it's really, really needed. Really, really needed. So thank you for sharing with all of us today. And I hope listeners will be encouraged by this to maybe consider, you know, adding this as a specialty or getting some training to do couples work with military couples.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I love this topic. I could talk about it all day, and I really love this work. So I'm glad to be here sharing it with you.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.